welcome back.
Hey, welcome.
The Artist Coaching Podcast and the club's complete.
Yes.
Jay's back from the man flu.
Yeah, I had a severe case of the man flu. I felt a slight tingling in my head, so I was like, ooh.
Ooh, that's...
I need to lay down.
Lay down and chill.
No, I had a serious flu. I had a fever for like 3-4 days. It was almost at that point, should I call the doctor? And then I got better a little bit. So, yeah.
Okay. Nice. Good to have you back.
Yeah. Yeah, good to be back. And it's funny because I may sound like I have a cold, but I am working with my manager for a year now. Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh, you sound good. And I was like, no, I have a cold. And she's like, but she doesn't know any other voice of mine because since my kid goes to daycare, I have a cold a lot. Yeah. So,
yeah, that's,
yeah. Deadline.
I get a lot of messages. Jay, where's the old Jay voice? You know?
What's the old Jay voice? What's the difference?
It's like this.
That's
high, squeaky.
You can hear the energy in it. You can still hear like some kind of life.
life in it.
Yeah, life, exactly.
Yeah. Am I?
No, but being sick as a. Basically, as a producer, you run your own company. It's the worst feeling to be sick because everything just shuts down.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny, even though you have a manager or an agent, you're still the one who always has to be on top of everything.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a beginning producer, please realize it's tough. And if you get sick, no one's
talk about that for a second, because not all artists realize that they're running a business. And especially the ones who get bigger. I'm not sure how that has been with you, but what I see is that some of the artists who get successful on a younger age, once they are successful, they kind of get stuck in this whole business mode and they don't realize that they're running a business. Like they have a manager, they have a booker, and they expect that the manager takes care of everything and that the manager is the CEO, let's say, and they just have to make music and that's it. But How did that go for you guys?
Exactly like you just described. I was like, why is my manager not doing anything?
Yeah.
And then there comes a day when your high days of your career are already over. And you're like, hey, wait a minute. When you're not in the hype, let's say, like when you don't have big tracks out on the main stages, then hey, not everything happening is just happening. Mm-hmm. I feel like when you have success, everything's kind of happening and you get your shows. But then once that gets a bit less, you realize, hey, nothing's just happening. There's always someone that needs to be on top of everything. And then you think, oh, my manager will take care of it or I get a new manager. But then you realize they can do a lot, but they still need someone to say, to tell them or ask them, hey, can you do this? Or can you do that? Or can we get me into a studio session with that writer? You're still very much you have to have the vision and work with people to get to the next stage of your career, I guess.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's common practice for companies to think when they are when the results are good to think that they're doing good, but a lot of the times a company, it's not going that well. And you will only notice when times get worse, then all the weak points come to the surface. And you will notice like, oh, fuck, I was just on a good wave. And it wasn't so much the success didn't have to do with all the efforts I made and the strategies and all that stuff. But it was just I was on the right time, on the right place and on the right wave. And especially in the big room era, we were all more products of a bigger thing than ourselves. And even people that had like 14,000 Facebook likes, they were being booked in the United States across the Atlantic. But us too, everybody. It was insane. And everybody was looking for that next thing. And usually if you were a DJ from Holland and you had a few Facebook likes or one record on spinning or whatever, and that was good enough. And then everybody was thinking like, whoa, look at us doing good, we have a big fan base and all that kind of stuff. But none of it was true. It was all a really thin crust with which we were operating. And
to be fair, if you get that kind of like, oh, this is all going very well, that also helps in a way. So that also, you get some kind of like, maybe it's like naive, you're naive and you think that you made all that happen. And because of that, that does also help your career in a way. You kind of get like a bit cocky, maybe.
A bit oblivious. You're oblivious. So you're not thinking, you're not worrying. You're really free in your mind and making good music, because making music is kind of psychological as well. But on the other hand, you are running a business. And to be honest, for us also, we didn't even grab the concept that we were, how successful we were at some point. That also was like a thing, you know, you're too modest maybe.
Yeah.
And it comes to
especially
show
in Holland.
Yeah, definitely. And it comes to show that you really have to have people around you that are honest, fair, that they can say to you what you have to do, how you are operating, if it's good or not. But it's really hard. And and also when you're young, what the fuck, man, what do I know? You're just beginning, and all of a sudden you can afford a big car, and you're thinking like, fuck that shit, I'm buying a big car, driving around all day, wave to the girls, and fuck that music.
But it's what they call the everyone's a genius phase, right? So nonetheless, you have talent. If you work hard, like, suddenly everyone's a genius, everyone gets booked, everyone, like, as you mentioned, like, I still remember that the only thing you kind of needed was a Dutch flag behind your name on the flyer, and it sold out, you know?
Amsterdam on SoundCloud, if that was your location.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you changed the way where you lived in Amsterdam, and then you were serious,
instead of Drunen, but if as long as it said Netherlands, it was good.
Yeah. But it was just such a hype, and still going on at some points. But the music scene is more wise now. And
A lot of I notice a lot of promoters, and that's also because like clubs are just harder to fill. But it's way more about, hey, how many tickets do you sell? And I remember like back in 2014, way more clubs were always full. So then as a bigger act, you would get booked, and the club would not really notice a big difference, but they would be a club that's always full but has the big names.
It wasn't really like that, Jopke, to be honest. It was more that if you would book a big room artist back then, the club would be full. Actually pretty much matter which one it was. Of course, there were some differences, but and that was the thing. And now, people are more wise. Don't forget, in 2009, the international dance scene was so small. I mean, America wasn't even a factor in the whole dance scene.
It became a factor in that period of time.
Yeah, it was all starting up then. And also don't forget, like China, our first booking in China was in 2016. Can you even imagine? That one was when it all started to open up.
Yeah.
And so it was a really young industry. And of course, learning curves are easily done nowadays because there's so much knowledge to be found. But I also can remember when we were talking in 2010, 2012 to management, man, the first management firms in Holland, music-wise, they were just starting in the dance scene, you know. It wasn't even common practice. That all came later. And then everybody thought, okay, I need to have a manager. I need to have this. I need to have that. And we were just all going into that grind mill and thinking everything was normal. People started to fly business. But
Started to collect houses.
Some were doing it every time. I know Jobke once or twice booked a business flight. That's okay. But some were doing it like structurally.
Yeah, because otherwise you get the business class police, Ralph, and he calls you.
No.
Like, the what thing
is,
are
why
you
I
doing?
Called you. They charged our credit card, because we're in the same agency, our credit card for a flight Jobke did. I was seeing
that was
3,500 euros for going to China. Marlon, what the fuck did you do?
But it was my tactic for years. For years.
We didn't even notice. That's how successful we are. We were. And but all jokes aside, it was insane. And everybody was just thinking everything was all normal. We are... Yeah.
Yeah.
And then times were became a little bit
it
harder.
It was also it was a little bit expected. It's also weird how back then I remember like sometimes I always fly economy and yeah, there's been rare occasions when I had a big tour and I would book business. But then I would also try to upgrade because you fly so much you get points. Mm. But then if I was in economy and I posted a picture, I would get comments like, what? Are you just flying economy? Mm. I remember that people were like, and then not just one. No, there were like always like then two or three comments about that. Yeah, you're such a big artist and you fly economy. But that's also the part of the how big the EDM scene was. And people really thought, and maybe we were bigger than we imagined, you know, bigger than
Well, if you think about
the movement itself was bigger than we could fathom.
Yeah. Yeah. But if you think about it, like the amount of followers that you've managed to build in that period of time, like compare yourself to other people, it's pretty sick. Like look at the biggest athletes on the planet, they don't have that many followers, you know.
It's the biggest athletes do, but
then it depends on. But there's not many athletes who have that many followers. It's really the one who are like commercially smart, like let's say Max Verstappen, for example, or Eliud Kipchoge.
I don't know if he's commercially smart. He's just fucking good, man.
Yeah, but his name is a brand. His name has become a brand. And all those other Formula One drivers, I'm not sure if they have that many followers, you know.
They're picking on the wrong guys, man.
Even the ones who are not in the top 10.
Like it's a top 10 tennis player, the number 11 of the world. I don't know.
Or the pro golfers. Pro golfers don't
Hockeyers,
have that many
hockey
followers.
Players?
Nah, who even watches hockey?
A lot of people.
Yikes. We will get a lot of angry hockey players right now.
Yeah, probably. But it's more like to compare, like... How many followers do you have by now, like on average?
We have around 800,000-900,000 on Instagram. I know TikTok
I'm
is
around
a lot less. It's like 80,000-90,000, but growing.
Okay, so who's can you name like a guy who's not a really famous Formula One driver?
Esteban Ocon.
Now Ocon has a lot these days because he was on Netflix.
2.2 million, okay.
Nick de Vries, maybe?
Nick de Vries, that's the Dutch guy, right?
Yeah, 830.
Yeah, but he's he drove for 10 races, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so not that famous.
Logan Sargeant? He's the worst.
Logan Sargeant...
He is American, though.
Is this Logan Sargeant? No, it's 416. Logan Sargeant.
Yeah.
How do you write that?
Logan, and then Sargeant, Sargent.
I
think.
Can't find him. I do have Logan Seagull here.
And that's
Sargent's a difficult word.
That's
for
a bird, man.
Yeah.
Also pretty fast.
But it's pretty impressive if you look at how many followers DJs have built over the years. It's pretty sick.
It's pretty sick. Yeah.
Yeah. And then it's funny how some people react to that, like I said, with the business class, or they think we're all
how
like
you
multi.
Not find Logan Sargeant. Yes, by the way, 757,000 followers.
Yeah. So then you talk about a guy who's in Formula One.
Yeah, but he's the worst, but still, yeah, he gets a lot of people watching him every weekend. This week, Saturday, Bahrain. Yes, sir, we go again.
Yeah, so he has like a weekly, well, at least a monthly stage where his name gets in front of millions of people.
And, definitely, yeah.
And he has 800,000 followers, just yep. to compare.
Like, yeah, you, but you don't know how busy he is on socials. And but true, also for him, if he has that kind of amount of people watching him, he should do something with it because it can give him brand value. Yeah. And yes, it's pretty insane that we as artists can have just as much as a Formula One driver. I mean, those are the 20 best in the world and get hundreds of millions of people viewing them every weekend. So I agree with you, Joey Suki.
Yeah. I think that's
we
a
agree,
nice
man. How nice. Cool is that?
For a change.
Can you give me a box?
I don't yeah. know where
for
you
me, this is a box.
Okay. Yeah. The other yeah. side for me, but we'll
I'm
see
on the left that of all lines up.
Yeah. Yeah. For the people who are listening, we gave each other a virtual box.
An airbox.
Airbox, yeah.
Yeah.
Just another topic that Jay wanted to discuss. First, Jay needs to rectify himself.
Oh, yeah. I got a message on Instagram, and he's the guy. Well, I see if I can find it. It's a bit... oh, here we go. He also had a question. Amazing. Hmm. So that I can also ask that question. So he said, in artist coaching, you said, I don't like remakes, but your latest track is a remake. Like, what?
Zing.
So I was like, uh-oh, did I get caught here?
Shots fired.
Well, we had some discussion because I'm like, maybe it's out of context or I didn't explain. I may have contradicted myself a little. What I will say about remakes, to clear my point up, I think if you're a big artist, there is, you don't need to do a remake of like a cheap remake, like a simple, we know it's gonna score kind of remake. I think you then have the freedom and like maybe even, well, I wouldn't say responsibility.
Is there a remake of a big artist you're
thinking
of
now? Way more the freedom of like, hey, I can explore something new and it doesn't need to score because I don't need that kind of money or exposure anymore. That was kind of my point. And an example is Kygo with his remake of a Shakira song. And then instead of whenever, wherever, he changed the lyric to whenever, whatever. And it's like, that's literally kind of like, yeah, that's exactly what I mean. Like, they're just like, whatever, the streams come in. That's
whenever,
kind of what
whatever.
I mean. Then about my track called Coming Home together with Plastic Funk, go stream it now on all platforms. Yes, it's a remake of kind of a, that's classic, maybe poppy song.
I really like Coming Home,
but
yeah.
What I think about that is like,
tell
for me,
the world. Did he do something
me,
with it as well?
Yeah, I think so. But for me, it's kind of a remix, like a kind of a, hey, this is our twist to that song, and we still, it's kind of still respecting the original in a way. But that's why I'm saying yes, maybe I contradict myself a little bit. But hey, I'm human, man.
Shall I tell you some wisdom? It's wisdom bomb time, everybody. Grab your seats.
Wait. I have a soundboard somewhere.
Okay.
No, it's gone. No.
Okay.
Yeah, continue.
Thing is, with Spotify, that's the main streaming, the biggest one, and you get approximately like 60-70% of all your streams come from Spotify. And remixes don't get the same editorials as originals. So if you can do the cover version or an interpolation, whatever you like, and you can give it your own name and like a normal title and all, you can get more editorials than it's when it would be a remix. So it's really beneficial for you to make a cover version instead of a remix. And that's something I did want to say, because
that's what I mean. Why does Kygo need that? Kygo doesn't need that. David Guetta doesn't need that. That's my thing with it.
But still, they also want success, and that's the thing. Yeah, they're in their own league.
Contradiction.
Battling
that's
out.
Contradiction. Yeah. That's why like the guy is, by the way, is Music Lover One Itis on Instagram. That's why he's like, he probably, hey Jay, you don't need that. So that's why.
Yeah, it's a fair point. And to be honest, yeah. I kind of agree with you. You do have cheap remakes and you have the good ones. And I really liked the one by Guetta, I'm Good and I'm Feeling All Right. That was a smart one. I really liked that one. But there are also some that I think are a little bit more cheap. And I liked what Tiesto did with Heidi Klum, Sunglasses at Night, a girl singing it, and they did a proper job. And I really liked
Heidi
that one.
Klum.
So,
huh? Heidi Klum.
Yeah, Heidi Klum. Yeah, that's pretty cool, huh?
Should I ask the question he has? It's a long one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Why are some big artists like Tiesto, etc., never take some time to show how they make a track? Because they have millions of streams and get enough money, so they don't have to worry. Or are there artists with ghost producers, or don't they have ghost producers? Personally, I'll skip artists when they are never communicate in that way with their fans. Hard to explain, but maybe a nice topic for the coaching podcast. Why are there big artists who never show you how they make their music? And he's not a fan if, like, let's say Tiesto doesn't show that or has a ghost producer. He's like, I don't want to listen to Tiesto then. Which is, I think it's a thing in dance music. It's like, who's the producer? That's really a question that I think is a good question. I think, let's say David Guetta has guys working for him who, like, write his music or make his music, and he calls them, where's the finished product, please? That would be weird, I think. And he wouldn't be really the producer. He would just be, like, calling, hey, where's my delivered track? I think how David Guetta works is, like, hey, I have this idea for this track. And he gets a team of really good producers. He works together with them. And he's like, the main producer in that way. And he's, like, yeah, let's make this track. And then he is the producer and he has some guys helping him for production. But that's the thing in dance music. There are guys who are just like, hey, man, just give me a track that sounds like that track.
Those
will never be that big. Yeah. Can you give me a hit? And then they list some hits. They will never be like Tiesto, because Tiesto is always on the search for the next big thing, and it takes skill, it takes producer skill to understand what a track needs.
I think what's
kind of like Rick Rubin, for example.
Yeah,
he's not the guy that sings, he's not the guy that plays the instruments, but he has something that he adds to.
Would you listen to an artist singing and not writing their own lyrics, which is also a little bit weird.
Yeah.
Like this ballad, and it's really emotional and they didn't write it. But hey, I don't mind.
I think what's different in the dance industry is that somehow people think or feel like a DJ or a producer should do everything himself. So you should be the DJ, you should be the producer, you should be the songwriter. Like the mixing engineer, the mastering engineer. And in my opinion, all those things are different skill sets. So the fact that you can make music or that you know what works on a dance floor, just as Chesto does, doesn't mean that you're a great mastering engineer or a mixing engineer. It's a whole different skill set. And somehow people started to believe that as a music producer, you should own all those skills. While if you look at, for example, take the Beyoncé album, look on the cover and check like how many people have worked on that album. Beyoncé, the only thing she really does is sing. You know, all the other stuff is being done by other people. You have a mixing engineer, you have a writing person.
She can dance.
yeah, she can dance, obviously. But again, with dancing, she's probably not making up the dances herself. She has someone who does the choreography.
JC does that. They do it at home in the bathroom.
Yeah, exactly.
Like this,
it's more like the mindset of people that a music producer should do everything by himself. While if you look at other artists out there,
but there is a difference though, because why do we love Fred Again and Skrillex so much? It is because they live and breathe what they do. That's a different ball game.
I also think that they are different artists from most DJs or producers that I know.
Definitely, yeah.
They are the holy grail. It's the romantic aspect of DJs. It's like Martin Garrix made Animals all by himself in his attic, and then it became such a big hit. That's why he like instantly blew up. It's such a like romantic thing. That happened was amazing, and like that's what every kid is like, it's possible, wow. You can do something all the way yourself, which that's why it would still be awesome. And I think then kind of people get a little bit like maybe naive, and maybe when I was younger, I was also like, oh, David Guetta, he's just in the studio and he does all these things, and he's a genius, but it's because he works with all the right people. So you kind of have to.
Somebody did.
Yeah, you kind of have to grow up
under
and realize.
Have you listened to the Logical magic song?
What?
Somebody forgot to turn on the sub. It's insane.
What on the Logical song?
The Logical song. He also did a remake of the Logical song. Like of when I was young,
and there's no sub in it, or
man, it's insane.
But like,
yeah, it's but like really, really weird. It still has like 80 million streams. It does really well, but it has no sub.
You kind of have to grow up, I guess, and realize a lot of magic isn't real.
Don't meet your heroes, they say.
But then again, when it does happen, when someone is so like Fred Again, you see how big that hype is, because it's so real. Like there's nothing.
We actually also had an interesting discussion here. We are doing the radio show again, finally, and then we were talking about the concept, and then Marlon said, "Yeah, I want to gradually start slow and then end up like this." And then I was like, "Why would we? I mean, we're bass checkers, man." It's like having Metallica start with a certain ballad and then end up really, I know you want to listen to that artist because of the thing they do, you know. If I want to listen to kick ass energy, high quality EDM, I will turn on Bass Checkers.
Really?
And
well, yeah. That's how you describe yourself. Okay.
True, Ralph. Wow. And no, but I it's also high quality, that's maybe right. Also a thing like Fred Again, he's really a specific type what he does all the time. And maybe also for people it might, I mean, are Tiesto and Guetta still as pure? I mean, what Guetta does with Future Rave is really impressive also. I think that's they have certain alter egos, but it's also a little bit hard to relate with. And it's always it's just different animals, different breeds.
Did you see the video of Deadmau5 talking about Fred Again?
No.
Like normally Deadmau5 bashes everyone, right?
Yeah, Deadmau5
pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, but now in an interview, I saw it coming by on socials. He was talking about Fred Again, and he also said like, this guy is something else, you know, like what he does on stage and how he does it, it's insane.
Yeah.
So he respected him, which was new.
I didn't even know he could respect anybody.
Anyone, yeah.
Yeah. No, oh, but yeah, it's he is different, and yeah.
One other topic that Jay
mentioned. All the topics today,
yeah. Sure. Yeah. Wow, Jay, good to have you back, man.
Yeah,
no, last week it was also really boring without you, Jay. We were just looking at
fun.
Each other.
I listened to the episode. I listened to the episode. It was fun.
Oh, you listened.
Thank you.
Nice. Ultra tickets.
Yep.
Jay was.
I saw on Reddit.
Jay was blown away.
For a Saturday ticket, you pay just general access Saturday one day $399, and there's a $107 processing fee.
What? Is that an official ticket shit?
Well, that's the thing. I saw it's a screenshot on Reddit.
Well, let me check. Ultra maybe Music tickets.
See if I can find
it. Can be right, man.
It's a screenshot, so I can't really see if it's the.
It's a 3-day ticket.
UltraMusicFestival.frontgatetickets.com. So
no,
maybe
it's a 3-day. A 3-day ticket costs $400.
Oh yeah, 3-day. Sorry about that.
Yeah, $400, and then you have, there's a star, tickets subject to availability and do not include shipping or handling charges, service charges, state taxes.
$107.
So that's probably the $107 on top of it. So let's say roughly $500 for 3 days.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite a steep price. You do
and
get
you
something back for it.
You don't even get to see Bassjackers for that money.
No.
You don't get
insane.
To see the pinnacle of EDM.
Fuck that shit. That's called Ultra. How do you spell that?
Ultra Music Festival. It's 95% sold out.
Oh, it's not even sold out.
When is it? March?
No, but Ultra doesn't usually sell out right away or something. That's always
oh,
they're always
wow.
the.
I thought Ultra and EDC and I mean, if you heard about Tomorrowland, that shit sold out in like 5 minutes.
Tomorrowland is 30 minutes, yeah. I think, this year.
How yeah. expensive is Tomorrowland, actually? I don't know.
Tomorrowland, we've paid $180 for 1 day.
Woof.
Oh, wow.
So I'm not sure what like the weekend prices what? Are, but...
You got to see Bassjackers.
No, hey. I don't, because I'm different day.
Ah, well,
I'm
that's
going,
your fault.
I guess it's the first the 21st. Saturday.
The 21st of July, Sunday. Hey.
No, it's
Saturday. Do you know which stage you're ready?
Huh?
Jopke, do you know which stage?
No. Main stage, man. Nice. No, but it's also it's pretty expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whoa, dude, that's insane. So it's actually performing for a bunch of rich kids, or actually people are really poor again.
I do think if you compare the two. Like if they, let's say they're the same price, ridiculously expensive, I would think for Tomorrowland you get way more than for Ultra.
Yeah, true.
Think so too.
It's all personal experience.
Yeah, but they both
they
have their own.
Because I do want to play Ultra at some point again.
They both have their own magical thing, but I think Tomorrowland is like you'd enter a different world. And Ultra just has that you're in the big Miami and it's so big. It's such a, if you're on the main stage of Ultra, I've stood there backstage.
Me too.
You just, you feel that like before you're a DJ, you know, goes on, you just feel that like, whoa, this is something big's about to happen. It's really,
what I do notice with Ultra is that the environment, so in between those big like skyscrapers in that park, it's a great, great environment.
Yeah.
It's really something unique. With Tomorrowland, it's also great, but it's more like, it's different. It's just different. It's also great, but I do like the urban vibe that Ultra has.
Yeah, plus we're not so accustomed to being in a skyscraper area, you know? And like the park where Tomorrowland is, which has the really cool valley, and that's cool, mm-hmm. but that's, for us, more common. And we have Dance Valley also, kind of the same, Mysteryland, and then Tomorrowland. All festivals that are in Belgium or in the Netherlands, for the ones who don't know. And they kind of are the same setup. But I got to say, the Tomorrowland Park, and how big it is and everything, how well organized it is, that's insane.
You know what the good news is? Tomorrowland recently signed a remarkable 66-year deal, ensuring its presence in Boom's Schorre Park, until 2090.
Wow.
Hey, we can go grandpa raving there.
Exactly. Like, I'm not even sure I'm going to make that.
Imagine there's just people working on that deal at Tomorrowland, and they know I'm not even going to be around when that happens. That's
2090.
Crazy.
They have a license until 2019. That's crazy. Holy shit.
Maybe they want to sell.
I think they all, do. They also like they own parts of the park, right?
Well, they do invest a lot in the park, and I got a round tour there once, and the whole environment's really well taken care of all year round. So that's pretty cool, and they made eco ducts for all the animals and all that shit. It's really impressive and looks really nice, and. They already invested in the surroundings because of course when it's Tomorrowland they also it's quite a thing to do and as
it has its impact on its environment so it needs to take care of
that's the words I was looking for
Okay guys, I've got a few questions from the community.
Hey,
yesterday in the Q&A in the Discord we talked about AI tools again, and someone was wondering if you guys used any AI tools with being more efficient in the studio.
Define AI, because if you have Splice and it gives you a recommendation for a sound, that's AI. So,
well, I think with AI, it's more like those synths, recreators, maybe ChatGPT, like Sick Individuals used it a lot.
They didn't use it for the vocals. I tried it, man. ChatGPT, also the 4.0, they just do four-month shit. Yeah. And also the other AI tools for which you want to do vocals, you have to upload your shit. Hell no, I'm not going to do that. That's the whole jurisdiction of it. Fuck that shit.
So and you don't to be honest, use
I haven't encountered really good stuff yet.
Okay, fair enough. And then a few questions from one person, which is more produce related. First, when they click project info in FL Studio, how long do they spend on a finished track on average?
I don't look at that kind of stuff. Sometimes
I used to like.
You go, Jay.
I used to like really, like bragging with that a little bit, like, oh, I've worked really long on this, or oh, I worked really short on this. But what I realize is sometimes you spend a lot of time listening to a song. Also, like not even in the project, so like in your car or whatever. So the time working on it that doesn't really represent that. But it could be like 8 hours for a song. I think that's probably my average. I could open a project.
I'm opening the latest file now for the track that's coming out 22nd of March.
I'm going to do the same.
You should that's all pre-save, follow bass checkers.
Coming home, the hard way. I'm gonna see how long I spent in the project of the festival mix, as we made that on my computer.
You know, Plastic Funk is quite a decent padel player.
He is, very good. But he's half Spanish. Yeah. So,
I saw him in Ibiza in his club when we were playing padel there.
Nice.
It's a cool club.
Yeah, I played padel this morning, but I suck. So.
You suck?
Takes a while.
I suck, yeah.
Oh, that's weird, because you're a really good football player, Jay.
Am I still known in your football group, Ralph? This is a nice little story.
Jay decided to dedicate his life to goal.
I'm spending, this is like 2016 or something, I think. I'm spending the day at the Bass Checker studio, and then in the evening, they're like, hey, we're going to play indoor football. And we kind of miss one. We miss one player. So, Jopke, do you also play? I'm like, yeah, well, I'm not that good. But and I'm like, let's just a friendly match. So Ralph is like, yeah, I can bring Jopke. So I'm like, okay.
No, it was actually the manager back then, Nigel. He invited you. And then he put himself in another team than you.
That also that, yeah. And I don't know where they find these guys. Well, they're your friends, I guess. It wasn't a like friendly match. They went so hard, and I was just all over the place. And everybody was like, one guy said, "Hey, bring someone again," like really like hateful.
Okay.
It's still funny because that was Olive. He's actually a really good guy, but like just
It's like this. All those guys played football at a high level.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
And then Jobke, he doesn't play football ever. And yeah, then he gets thrown in the mix. Yeah, that's funny, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I found the project info. The thing about that story was that I don't know if they still do, but they sometimes refer.
Yeah, no,
oh,
no.
One guy, maybe bring Jobke.
You were a topic for a really long time, but this has been like 6-7 years ago. And we don't play football anymore. We're now playing padel. So
for a few years, it was like, hey, we have missed one guy. Maybe bring Jobke, and then everybody's just like laughing. And then okay, now who are really gonna bring? I just opened my project. It's 5 hours and 43 minutes. And I think that's relatively short. It also felt like that.
I gotta say, I opened also our upcoming collab with Timmy Trumpet called Classical Music. Out soon. And I'm just looking, did I make something different also here? Because it's quite long. Let's get back to it. No, it's just this song. 21 hours and 48 minutes. Plugins, 312. Channels, 251. Mixer tracks, 102. Yeah, it's quite a lot.
Yeah, for me here, plugins, 104. Channels, 81. Mixer tracks, 53.
Hmm.
Yeah.
But to be honest, it's not about those numbers. And
no,
it's about getting it right. And it's quite interesting. I just delivered the masters yesterday.
Here's another question, follow-up question. How many IDs actually lead to finished tracks?
One in every 20 ideas.
Yeah, I also work differently here. I gotta say, if I start something, I will get it right eventually. But it's not per se you have like 20 ideas within one track. You can describe it like that. But I know because I go to a kick real easy, real quickly. And that kick, if that kick is cool, then I will make a track around it. And that's when the ideas start. So sometimes I have like 7 or 8 different lead options that go with that kick. And eventually one will succeed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I guess I'm also in a point of my career where I'm trying to find a sound, trying to find a kind of a direction. So that's also why I'm trying to make a lot of ideas and kind of figuring out a little bit where do I want to go. And I think for Bassjackers, you guys really have like, hey, this kind of techno-influenced EDM is really our thing. So that also makes a difference because... Yeah, that also makes a difference because I remember like 2016 when I had way more of a direction. You're just like, oh, I'm going to make another one of those kind of tracks. And then you already have kind of an idea of where to start. And now I'm just like literally in the studio playing around. And then sometimes, hey, this is a cool sound. Oh, wait. And then you have a new idea. But that's why it takes...
I kind of miss those days in the studio because... that's where the really cool stuff comes from.
Or not.
I do. Yeah. Huh?
Or not.
Or not. No, usually not. No, but I do sometimes work on a track and then I think, oh, fuck, this is a cool lead that goes with that. And then I also have now files that consist of like 2 different files that I have to merge together. And then sometimes people ask me, oh, can you send parts? No. Yeah. Just impossible. It's like this big mush that only I know how it works. And fuck you. I say fuck you a lot. It's nice.
Do you set deadlines to finish IDs?
I should, but I never do.
Okay, so both no.
It's okay. Kind of like how this also goes is I try, if I have an idea where I'm like, this is going to be a track, I try to finish an arrangement like as soon as possible so that you also get a lot of ideas for that track in, because you kind of lose that kind of like feeling with the project if you open it later. And then you have a song, sometimes that demo is already good enough to send to a label or discuss with your manager, or and then you have a starting point from there. And what then happens, you said, let's say you send it to a label and they're like, oh, we like it, but hey, finish it. And then you go really into work and really like, that's then your priority track, basically. Mm-hmm. Depends on your planning, but I guess that's how I how I decide also what to work on.
It's an interesting thing you say, because that's something I'm really not struggling with, but thinking about a lot, because I also like to quickly arrange a track, because sometimes a track becomes really boring at some point. Then your first drop is really cool. What do you do for the second drop? It needs something to add there. How do you work towards it? Do you do a bridge after first drop or not? Like a build up? What kind of track does it have? What's the purpose? More like dance floor or listening or whatever, blah, 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 blah. But nowadays, with all the short in, attention spans and like stuff with TikTok, some tracks are cool for like 30 seconds and they get become really big hits. And the rest doesn't matter because, let's say, Creed's Push Up, that's a big hit. I really like it. But have you ever listened to the original track, the whole arrangement?
Yeah, yeah.
It's weird, man.
Weird, yeah.
And kind of like it, but it's really specific music. It's not mainstream at all. And then I'm actually thinking of, why do we even bother to do a second drop nowadays? Why not only one drop? And I think that will become a thing. And then you have tracks of only like 1 minute 55, which is also not something I'm really enthusiastic about, but we will get to that point. And that's just stuff to think about, because I also like to arrange out a whole track that, to keep that in the attention. But some parts, some tracks, some big hits, like also the Jengi track, which I really like. It's a big hit, and we actually incorporated it in our sets. But if you listen to that whole track, at some point I'm like, man, turn the shit off. I'm done with it.
It's interesting what you say. Like, I think that's actually legit possibility, songs with one drop, because a lot, and all DJs know this, you always put a cue point at the end, at the outro. So you're like, hey, at the first drop you see like, okay, I need to switch it up, I need to mix it out already, I need to go to the next one. So you like set a cue point, or when you make a mashup, you just like mashup. I have this a lot of with my own tracks. Our track El Mariachi, I have a mashup of that, and then it's like that only one drop. So you already make the mashup only one drop, because you never play that second drop.
Yeah, you know.
But that also, it's tracks from back then.
Yeah, I gotta say,
are different because the second break is always very long. So yeah, you're like, oh no, I can't play that break because then we'll go into this like dark, boring, and that's also changed in my arrangements. Is already like the second break, I'm like, come on, that needs to be faster. I want to go back to the drop. So
a lot of cool tracks I'm listening then, tracks I know from TikTok or in sets or whatever, and I'm listening to them on Spotify for the whole part. I'm like, whoa, I didn't even know this break existed. Sometimes I don't even like that part. And but it's just not so important anymore, or it is. I don't know. That's the thing. Yeah. I'm kind of losing. Plus, our sets are really different now, because we, within the big room days, we would play a track, high intensity, then boom, gone. And then build up, boom, high intensity, and gone. We now want to flow it more. So those few moments you do have no beat in it, and like a moment, they are really more, they have more worth then. So, but then I run into the problem that my extended mixes are so different from my radio edits, man, I'm just losing the whole grasp of things. It's becoming a lot of factors to take into account now. And
but I think a lot of artists are struggling with this at this moment, because it's kind of like you're living in two different worlds. You have like the social media environment where music gets used, and you have the actual dance floors.
And that's so true.
I think both those environments require different elements or different arrangements, and I think that's kind of the split that we're in at this point.
It makes you work hard, you know. It's quite
good
a lot
to use your brains every now and then.
Man, I hate that. I'm not so evolved, you know. I'm more like a Neanderthal.
Exactly. No. Okay, I'm not sure if there's anything else you guys wanted to talk about today, but otherwise,
I have to go anyways.
Sorry.
I have to go anyways.
Okay,
so, perfect.
There's stuff more important than us.
Always.
Okay, cool. Nice. So last notes for everyone listening. If you're not part of that artist coaching Discord yet, as I said, we do bi-weekly Q&A sessions. Yesterday was one, which was very fun. You can join it. It's in the description or in the bios of the social media pages.
Don't forget to give us a thumbs up. Subscribe to this channel share it with as much friends
every week
or enemies as possible.
Yes.
Is it coming online every Thursday, Joey?
Every Thursday. So we record on Wednesdays, and every Thursday it's getting live.
Get that in your head. Every Thursday.
It's a
every
pattern.
Every Thursday.
It's
if
a
we
thing,
can't
yeah.
make it, we'll bring special guests.
I must say, I'm
it.
pretty proud of ourselves that we've managed to do this consistently every week.
Yep. I think
and
what
I'm
is a
really
good rule.
Proud of the people listening to it consistently every week, for because that's sure. the hard part.
But this is a good rule for us. If you can't make it, okay, so yeah, we all have kids, so it's like we have important reasons sometimes. But also, just we need to really try to get a good replacement.
Yeah, maybe that's the rule. You know, if you can't show up, you need to come up with a replacement.
Yeah, next week I can't make it. Put David.
People are hoping now. Please let Ralph not show up. Get a good replacement. Anybody.
Fuck off.
Anybody.
Anybody else. Cool. I'll see you guys next week.
Peace.